we're excited to talk some baseball. Scott Miller, columnist for Bleacher Report, he joins us now. Scott, how are you?
Good, guys. How are you?
Doing good.
Glad to have you with us. We were just kind of talking about how baseball can, at this time of year, how baseball can jump to the center or the front page of national sports consciousness, and it seems to be controversial situations and controversial situations only. There's been some excellent performances already to this point in the season, as much as I hate granting him this. My co-host loves Clayton Kershaw, and Clayton Kershaw is having just an unbelievable year, but because of the overshadow factor, I guess, of the NBA Finals going on right now, it seems like the only way baseball can jump to the forefront is with a brawl or somebody throwing at somebody else's head or something like that. Is there any other way that baseball can boost the profile this time of year?
Yeah, you know, and I'm glad to talk about that subject because, you know, I've covered baseball, pretty much been a one-trick pony. I mean, I don't cover football, basketball. I mean, it's been about 25 years I've covered baseball, and it's been a, you know, lifelong passion of mine, and it's my favorite sport. I think it's the best game. I'm prejudiced, all that stuff. That said, yes, I get real frustrated with sometimes the lack of coverage and some of what you're talking about right now. And I think, to me, there are a couple issues at work. One, 162 games, as all of our lives have become so busy, and we all seem to be overextended in this day, and, you know, in the internet age, the digital age, and everything's competing for attention. And, you know, baseball absolutely has to deal with that issue. And Commissioner Rob Manfred, you know, as you guys, I'm sure you well know, that once he took over, you know, he said one of his mandates, he's got to make sure to connect with the younger generation and stay connected. And I think one way to get baseball, keep it on the front page, you know, especially the digital age, you know, you've got to make sure the millennials, the young people, like the game. It's delivered to them in ways that they can watch it and consume it and pay attention to it. And, you know, I think baseball through the MLB.com, the At-Bat app, where you can watch games on your phone, that kind of stuff. That all helps. But that's one issue, I think, is Commissioner Manfred has to, you know, continue to make sure that, you know, the game resonates with everybody, but especially young people. I think one area, I think things are cyclical in this country in general, and I keep waiting, and I don't know, I might be waiting the rest of my life, but I like football. I especially like college football. NFL's fine. That said, I get so worn. Everything is football, football, football. When I go to the gym to work out, you know, I mean, I'm a baseball writer, so I'm on my way to the ballpark by 2 o'clock in the afternoon usually. I maybe go to the gym, work out at 11 o'clock in the morning. You know, they've got ESPN, ESPN2 on there, and it's unbelievable. It's like, it'll be June, and I go to the gym, and I'm there an hour, hour and a half, and both ESPN channels, usually at least one, they're talking some football, it's NFL Live, it's NFL this, it's NFL that. And I bring that up because I also think, you know, one issue is the self-professed worldwide leader in sports, ESPN. I think things also started to change for baseball. Once ESPN got some NFL rights, especially to Monday Night Football, you know, you get rights to that, so now they just have gone all football all the time. And I think some of the major rights holders, there's so many people now that pay big money to telecast football, and so it becomes a self-perpetuating machine because it behooves them to keep talking about football so that they can continue to boost their ratings and sell their advertising. And, you know, that's among other things. I think that's some of what baseball's battling right now.
With that in mind, does baseball need to do a better job, or can baseball do a better job of creating that sort of appointment viewing? You know, on this show, our producer, yeah, big baseball fan, my co-host, big baseball fan. I'm a baseball fan, grew up on the game. My Twins are bad right now, so it admittedly diminishes my interest. But part of the problem with that 162-game schedule is that you never really know when your guys are going to play. Is it going to be an afternoon game on a Thursday? Does baseball, yep, Major League Baseball, need to create better programming, better appointment viewing that is an equivalent to something like Monday Night Football, where you have a big-time matchup, and maybe it's on the mound, maybe it's Clayton Kershaw pitching to whatever hitter's the hottest right now, that all baseball fans and even casual fans are like, oh, yeah, I want to watch that?
You know, I think there's something to be said for that. I think that possibly I think that's a legitimate point, and they may have to look at that. I think also at the same time, you know, going back to, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, back in the early 2000s, you know, when the Red Sox and Yankees both became good at the same time, you guys know as well as I do how much it's like it seems like whenever there's national games on, like the Sunday Night Baseball or you know, many others, Saturday afternoon, whatever, it's like Red Sox Yankees get shoved down our throats nonstop. And I do think baseball, one way to continue to keep it in the headlines on the front page is to do a better job of developing stars. You know, I mean, like, there are individual stars in the game. You guys mentioned Clayton Kershaw. Mike Trout certainly is one. Bryce Harper is one. But it seems like, by and large, you know, it's like about, it seems like oftentimes it seems nationally like about six baseball teams exist, right? The Red Sox, the Yankees, the Cubs, who are a very likable team right now. And I think with the Cubs being good this year, I think that's going to help baseball, because as we go through the summer, you always need a couple of your marquee teams to be exciting. And I think the Cubs, in their history and their national team, I think that can help baseball this year. But, you know, again, it seems like five or six teams exist. And you know, I know there are so many teams like the Twins or the Milwaukee Brewers that are more regional teams than national teams. But, you know, that said, national, like shoe commercial contracts, for example, the NBA really started to bounce back. You know, I mean, a lot of us who are of a certain age, you remember, in the early 1980s, the NBA Finals used to be on tape delay. CBS showed them at 11:30 at night. And when Magic Johnson and Larry Bird came onto the scene, that changed the game for a lot of, you know, for the whole league. And now, where baseball is concerned, you know, you saw Magic and Bird do their thing. You saw Michael Jordan nail the Nike shoe commercial endorsement. And then all, you know, we got Nike and Michael Jordan crammed down our throat. And then it went kind of from him to Kobe Bryant to LeBron James. You know, one thing, baseball can't really get any shoe contracts because, you know, you guys might have noticed, baseball players wear cleats, and you don't wear cleats every day in real life. But that said, my point is the Michael Jordan, the Kobe Bryant, those national spokesmen for such. Baseball hasn't had a lot of that. You know, a couple of years ago, Mike Trout and Ryan Howard of the Phillies, they were spokesmen for Subway, and I was talking to Matt Kemp one day about this, and like Kemp said, you know, big deal, but that's not going to excite kids to go out and watch the game and play the game. Ooh, my guy is you know, nothing against Subway, but, you know, my Trout's pushing Subway sandwiches. You know, they need to push cool things like shoes or whatever, and I think in baseball, that's one niche I think baseball needs to continue to work on, too, is to develop stars, and not just for the Yankees and the Red Sox, but for other teams. You know, Bryce Harper is a perfect example, Mike Trout, and get them out nationally doing, you know, some pitches for some national products that are going to capture the imagination, especially of the kids and the younger people. And I think that'll play into it as well.
Is it about spreading it around a little bit too, with exposure for everybody else? Because I think so. I think a lot of people, they don't know who Manny Machado is. They don't know who Chris Sale is. They don't know who a guy like Jose Altuve is. And when I was a kid, yeah, I knew who all the players were. And it just seems like, I think you're right. Everything is Yankees, Red Sox with some Cubs and some Dodgers and some Cardinals and Giants sprinkled in. And everything else is just an afterthought at this point.
Yeah, and I think absolutely, and that's what I'm saying when I'm talking about creating stars. You know, I kind of, you know, segue from everything Yankees, Dodgers, into the shoe commercial stuff I just talked about. But yes, absolutely. I think, you know, baseball's got its national TV deals with ESPN, with Fox, but yet, you know, understandably, because ESPN, Fox, they're in the business of making money, and so they keep going to the same teams. You know, the Yankees, the Red Sox, and you're absolutely right. Manny Machado, all of a sudden now everybody knows about him because he just charged Yordano Ventura at the mound and slugged him in the face. All of a sudden now people know Manny Machado. Well, this kid's a great talent. He's off to a most valuable player type of start this year. He easily could be the MVP of the American League this year. The Orioles are a great story. You know, they under Buck Showalter continue to find ways to defy all the people that say, hey, they don't have enough pitching. Yet the Orioles have resurrected themselves. Pittsburgh Pirates, Andrew McCutchen is a fantastic player, exciting personality. You know, Machado, Chris Sale, you mentioned him, could easily be a Cy Young guy this year. So, I think a lot of it is, I think I'd love to see baseball internally lean on ESPN, lean on Fox, lean on whoever's televising it nationally and say, look, we need some of these, you to push some of these other teams, some of these other players, because that's the way as well to promote the game, to sell the game. And I think the game, again, I'm prejudiced. I get that. I've spent my last 25 years, covering the game and I've got a lot myself invested in it, let alone everybody else. And I think the way to sell the game and I think the game can sell itself. But it just needs to be put out in front of people, maybe in a different way other than, well, Sunday Night Baseball, Yankees, Red Sox again.
Scott Miller is our guest talking Major League Baseball here on ESPN 700. We know demographically that baseball hasn't done as well with the young fans as maybe the league hopes it will, and they're going to try and combat that. But what about like racial demographics? We know that there's fewer African American players than there used to be. Latin American players are very prevalent in the game. Does baseball resonate more with the Latin American community, which is continually growing in our country? Are they doing enough to reach out to that fan base? You just mentioned Andrew McCutchen, who is not only a dynamic, well-spoken, awesome baseball star, but he happens to be black. So are they doing the right things in trying to grab certain demographics based on, you know, just the commonality between these people?
Yeah, you know, they're doing some things, but they can do more. There's no question. I mean, they've got a program reviving baseball in the inner cities, the RBI program. And, you know, they've devoted millions of dollars into, you know, a handful of major cities, you know, inner city, you know, dishing out equipment to maybe some impoverished type of young players, running leagues, things like that. So that's all very good. But yeah, I think you can continue to do far more. I mean, I think, you know, one reason, there are a couple of reasons to me, well, probably we could get into a long discussion, go way more than a couple of reasons why baseball's demographics, you know, are a little skewed. And you know, whereas in the 1970s, 25% or whatever it was of baseball players were African-American heritage. And, you know, now it's only down about 5%. And, you know, of course, you have the influx of a lot of the Latin players from the Dominican Republic and places like that. But where that's concerned, part of the reason, I think, for the decline in the African American percentages, along with the rise in popularity of the NBA and even the NFL, there's no question that if you're a young player, you can get to that quicker. It's a quicker route to the pro basketball or pro football versus baseball, where you sign and oftentimes usually you have to play several years in the minor leagues before you hit the show. I think in our kind of instant gratification society where everybody wants what they want right now, I think a lot of kids view football and basketball as a quicker meal ticket. And I think that there's something to that. Now, one area where African Americans are concerned, I think the rise of the specialization in sports and in baseball that includes travel ball, I think that is a factor, because travel ball, for those kids that are talented and they play year-round, it gets expensive. I mean, you know, people I talk to, I don't have a son who's played, but, you know, I know friends who do and have, and it can run a couple thousand dollars or more a year to have your kid on a travel ball team. Well, the travel ball teams, those are higher skilled players, and they're going to travel and play, and then they have a better chance to be seen by the scouts. And you go back to the African Americans, who, again, generalizing, but especially the African Americans in the bigger cities, oftentimes they're not the ones. They don't have the money to go play travel ball. You know, they're not. They don't come from homes where they're going to say, "Okay, we're going to spend $2,000 for my son to go on this travel ball team for this year, and then next year I'm going to have to come up with another $2,000 or $3,000 or whatever it is." So, travel ball is one area of the sports world where the more affluent kids get to play; those without the money don't. And you're leaving an awful large set of players behind who are skilled, many of whom are the minorities, you know, while the white kids get to go play because, you know, generally speaking, they've had more money. That's an area, I think, also that hurts baseball and Major League Baseball. And that's an area where, as baseball works on its RBI, baseball intercity programs, I'd like to see baseball get more involved in the travel ball if it's going to be throwing some money around, and maybe using some of that money donated to have, you know, the kids that might have athletic talent and baseball talent but don't have the money to play travel ball, be nice if they were able to get some of it so they could go and play and then be seen by scouts.
Scott, the Cubs are off to a tremendous start, 41-17 so far on the season. They're the best team you've seen since which team?
Well, I mean, you know, certainly statistically, that especially when they started 26-5 or whatever that was, I mean, they did not quite get to the level of the 1984 Detroit Tigers, who started 35-5. But that was the start that, for me, it evoked memories, probably partly because I grew up in Michigan and I was there during the 1984 season when those Tigers went 35-5. But I know that the Cubs started when they were 25-6. It was the best start since the 84 Tigers. And I found that interesting, not just a parallel, but I remember so well over the years, I wasn't covering baseball in 84, but when I did start covering, Sparky Anderson was still managing the Tigers. And I talked to him a number of times, and he said, 1984 was his toughest season as manager by far. You wouldn't think that. I mean, just on the surface, you think, geez, Tigers started 35-5. They ended up beating Toronto. They were finishing first place by like 15 games. You'd think it was a cakewalk. Well, Sparky's feeling was, no, when we started 35-5, the rest of the year, I was scared to death that we'd either blow the lead or that we wouldn't win the World Series. Because once we were 35-5, everybody, all of our fans were so excited. From that point on, it would have been a disappointing season if it ended any other way without us winning the World Series. So he said that was my toughest year. And I ran that by, I talked to Joe Maddon. I was in Chicago last month for a long story for Bleacher Report, kind of an in-depth look at the Cubs. And I read what I just told you by both Joe Maddon and Theo Epstein. And, you know, Maddon hadn't heard that story. He kind of got a kick out of it, and he could identify with it. But he's such a cool, laid-back guy. Theo Epstein, it's funny. He said, yeah, he totally identified with it. He said, yeah, as an executive, he said, I always thought if any of my teams ever got off to a start like this, it'd be almost like, hey, now I can kick my feet up, sip some lemonade, sit back, watch the team play, enjoy it. And Theo was like, at the time he said that, this was a month ago, and he said, but it's actually that what I thought. He said, it's absolutely not true. He said, because I know we're off to a great start. I also know this is not baseball reality. He said, I know we're going to go through a down period, probably multiple down periods this year, because that's just what baseball is. So, he said, I know I've got to keep looking. We've got to keep pushing to get better. We started off well like this, and now we've got even more of a target on our back. Everybody's coming after us. So it was kind of interesting. I thought that's a comparison for me, and interesting talking with Theo Epstein and Joe Maddon, especially after, as I said, knowing Sparky always said that 84 year by far was his toughest.
Before we let you go here, Scott, I just want to ask you about Clayton Kershaw, because I have to. Is Clayton Kershaw pitching better than any pitcher you've seen over the past 25, 30 years? Is he rivaling what Pedro did 15 years ago?
Yeah, he's if not better than anybody I've seen, at least as good. I mean, you know, the second half Jake Arrieta had last year and then the beginning of this year, you know, that it's hard to imagine pitching better than that. Hard to imagine pitching better than, as you said, what Pedro did, you know, however long ago that was. Put it that way, Kershaw is pitching it absolutely as well as anything I've seen in the, at least a few decades. Better than I've seen, arguably. There have been some really good pitching performances, though. The ones I just mentioned come to mind. But, yeah, Kershaw. The thing that's stunning is that strikeouts-to-walk ratio. And I know strikeouts today, modern players are setting records left and right for how many times they strike out. I mean, people strike out in this game more than they ever have. Hitters, I don't think – they're more undisciplined. You don't see hitters shortening up their swing with two strikes. There are a number of reasons for it. So you almost have to grade a little bit on the curve in terms of strikeouts, and that's not diminishing what Kershaw's doing at all. But whatever he is, I think he's like 105 strikeouts, and he's only walked six. The six numbers, to me, is what's so stupid. That's just crazy. That, you know, that ratio is just phenomenal. So, you know, it's more power to him, and probably this is the point of our talk that I ought to, you know, I'm not very good at tooting my own horn, but I probably should say, since you asked me about Kershaw, right, it went up today, posted right now on the Bleacher Report website, is a long, in-depth feature I did on Clayton Kershaw when he was tied in with today's Major League Draft. Kershaw was drafted 10 years ago, and it's crazy to look back now, but the Dodgers took him in the first round, but with the seventh overall pick. Six teams went ahead of the Dodgers, picked other guys, somebody other than Kershaw, and within that, five of those teams picked pitchers. Kershaw was the sixth pitcher taken in the draft 10 years ago. So in the story today on Bleacher Report, I get into all the reasons and how the Dodgers were able to nab what is clearly an all-time pitcher with the number seven overall pick. And I'll leave you a teaser. It involves Luke Ochevar. It involves Jordan Walden. It involves Las Vegas school system. It involves a possible case of racial profiling. All of that. There's all kinds of crazy angles to why, how it came to be during those 2 month lead up to that draft, how the Clayton Kershaw got to the Dodgers.
That's Scott Miller, national lead Major League Baseball columnist for Bleacher Report. Go read what he has up there. I'm not the Clayton Kershaw homer that you are.
I'm going to read it right now.
I'm definitely going to read that. Thanks, Scott.
My pleasure, guys. It's an enjoyable chat. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.